to do something.
Man, sie hält auch nah nur. Goat butts against the hedge and its horns become entangled.
I don't think I've had the pleasure.
Miss Gracie Law, Mr. Egg Shen.
Egg's kind of our local authority on Lopan. Let's open this up.
How? It has been almost 2 hours. Let's just go over there, beat down the door, and...
No, Miss Law. We have to gather our strength, because now there's clouds and thunder.
The image of difficulty at the beginning.
But finally, we shall bring order out of chaos.
First of all, I just want to tell you what a great show you got. I listen to you all the time.
Thank you. What do you want to talk about?
Hey, did I tell you guys I got a goat?
On June 4th, 1989, the Chinese military opened fire on protesters seeking more freedom, killing anywhere from hundreds to thousands of demonstrators.
It remains one of China's most sensitive topics and something the Communist Party goes to great lengths to prevent people from talking about.
In these days leading up to the 30th anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre, China's security state and internet censors have already gone into overdrive. They've wiped the web clean of any references, and they've detained many activists who might speak out about the atrocities committed on that historic day.
Alan, leader to squadron. 3 enemy carriers burning. Time to go home.
Little column A, little column B.
Yeah, baby.
Hey, good morning, good evening, or good afternoon, wherever you are, whatever you do. A lot of things happening in the world today. Most of them are far beyond our control, you might say. So perhaps it's time we took a pause and thought about life and thought about the laws of gravity. The dragon of the black pool. VT8, 2001, trees, politics, and or the news. Don't touch that dial. Just try to hear me out for a while. Well, some days there are things that happen that make me feel really old. Yesterday it was my t-shirt. The bigger issue is how to communicate the past to the present. How to create roots. What else is new, am I right? Here's how you get a hold of me. The text machine is area code 209-565-DAVE. That's 209-565-3283. The email is dave@thedavebowmanshow.com. And, of course, we're on the web. Use your preferred non-denominational web search browser to take you to thedavebowmanshow.com. Or look for us on Facebook and Twitter and iTunes. Just look for The Dave Bowman Show. Ego bibere capulis ad olive viverv. I drink coffee that others might live. So, Cammie and I, after everything was done yesterday, we stopped at Starbucks. Now, to my wife's credit, she's been doing very well on our diet thing and has not had Starbucks for well over a month, I guess. And so yesterday we decided it was a treat day, so we decided to have some coffee, and we went to Starbucks, and the barista, so we're standing there, the barista looks at my t-shirt, and I'm wearing one of my favorite t-shirts. It's a t-shirt that I just absolutely love. It's just I gotta find it here. It's the Dragon of the Black Pool, China is Here t-shirt from one of the greatest movies ever made, Big Trouble in Little China. China is here, Mr. Burton. I don't even know what that means, he says. And there you go. Well, she asked me about the t-shirt. What does that mean? And so I'm trying to explain to her that, you know, and I'm doing it in a way that is not, I didn't just say, well, it's just a film. I was telling her it means China is here. The Wing Kong and the Kang Sing and even Mr. Lopan are all here, which, you know, then my wife interrupted and said, it's just a movie. Turns out she'd never seen the movie and she never even heard of the movie. And this led to a discussion about, you know, when did the movie come out? Her mother, who of blessed memory, who had just passed away recently, this was a great conversation, used to, I guess, make her watch quote-unquote old movies from the 70s. And she was starting, I guess, to get into 80s movies and whatever else. And so, you know, this movie came out in 1986. And then she said, I hate to tell you this, but I wasn't even born until... And I said, I don't really want to know. I really don't. Wasn't born until 2001. 2001. How do you tell someone that young. I mean, she's basically 19, right? How do you translate something from 1986 into a way that that person will hear it and understand it and like it? Now, one of the things about that movie, the Big Trouble in Little China, is I think it does. I think that movie has held up very, very well. It's not dependent on technology. It's not, you know, you're not seeing brick phones and that sort of thing. I mean, it's a good movie. It's a lot of fun, and it's still one of my favorites of all time. But I don't know. I started thinking about that. How do you communicate that to someone of that era? How do you tell them that story and have them interested in it? Because while it's a good story, her reaction was, it's from 1986. What does that mean? China is here. I mean, you got this mentality of how do you communicate that? And of course, today being the anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre, I started wondering about that. How do you communicate that to someone born in 2001 who has no concept of China in the way that those of us who grew up during the Cold War have a concept of China? You know, Tom Lehrer has a line in one of his songs about the, what's it called? The China, which we call Red China, is a communist country. And somehow or another, and I kind of get that sense, that feeling nowadays, that we've sort of forgotten that. We sort of don't even think of China as really the last bastion of Stalinistic communism. We recognize North Korea as such. We don't have any problem with North Korea being we don't have any problem with that. But somehow or another, China has we don't think of China the way we used to think about them. We used to think about them as, you know, communist enemies. And starting in 1972 with rapprochement, when Nixon went to China, you know, it's an old Vulcan proverb, only Nixon could go to China. From that time, because of detente and the demise of the Soviet Union, China has sort of dissipated as this ideological enemy of the United States and a freedom across the board. And so we have a hard time now. You know, it would be like, I guess, in the 23rd century, the 24th century, explaining to young people then that, you know, Klingons and humans used to hate each other. The Federation and Klingons used to hate each other. And that was the whole point, of course, of the arc of the story of the movies in Star Trek, was this demise of the Cold War and how we've gone from this ideology that this is an enemy to this is not an enemy. They may not be necessarily friends, but they're not necessarily an enemy. And how do you communicate to those folks what happened on this day 30 years ago? And you heard there at the top of the show, the news people talking about the fact that China, which we call Red China, has gone out of its way to purge any reference to this in its own media, its own internet. You can't even hint at it. I know lots of people that have gone to China. Chatroom Jeff regularly used to travel to China. I don't know if he still does or not. I've got a friend, KK, who travels to China. I have some old friends at Synagogue in Modesto that go to China on a fairly regular basis. And I would imagine when you go there, you kind of have to be, you know, cautious about what you say. I've been in foreign countries and I've been told, look, you're an American, but you're not in America. And so there are certain things that you do not do here. And if you want to not create havoc and problems, you don't do those things. And so I imagine people go to China, which we call Red China, and they behave themselves in ways that are appropriate for that area. But still, it's got to be a little frustrating, doesn't it? This whole idea that somehow or another, this massive event in which hundreds, if not thousands of people were gunned down by the Red Communist, Red Chinese People's Liberation Army in defense of a communist regime battling against forces that were asking for more freedom, has been completely erased from their history. And consequently, because China has so much influence worldwide, and because it, you know, whatever this thing is where we've kind of put China on this weird shelf where we don't think of them perhaps the way we should think of them anymore, people today don't really comprehend the horror of what went on that day and those days, those weeks leading up to that. We came out of the Cold War. We came out of the Eastern European revolts where, you know, Romania and the Hungary and Poland and Gdansk and Solidarity and East Germany and the fall of the Berlin Wall and all of those things happening. And it was happening so fast. And there was this realization that freedom was upon us. The world, the things that we had tried to do, so to accomplish for so long, were finally coming to pass. That when Tiananmen Square opened up, and it was almost there was almost this assumption that, you know, great, Red China is going to fall, and the People's Republic of China will be back in business again. And when that young man stepped in front of that tank, that line of tanks, that's the thing people don't realize, is that there's a whole line of tanks that he's standing in front of, at least five or six. And it's a fascinating thing to watch if you've never seen the video. But when he stepped in front of those tanks, it was almost like we were watching this and we realized that this is the moment. This is when the world is going to change, right here, right now. And when he climbed up on that tank, and that's the part people forget, he actually climbs up on that tank. He's having a discussion with what appears to be one of the crew members. He's kind of yelling at him, kind of pleading with him, kind of all of that sort of stuff. And the ending of this whole thing is, well, somewhat disappointing. How many of you remember how that incident ended with that particular man in line of that those particular tanks? He gets down off the tanks. The tanks start to move again. He jumps back in front of them again. And there's this moment where you think he's going to convince these tanks to stop. He's done it. He's accomplished his mission. And you can see that he's still gesticulating wildly at these tanks and talking to them. And suddenly there's a man on a bicycle who rides out and appears to join him in yelling at the tanks. But then after a moment, you realize that he's not yelling at the tanks, the guy on the bicycle. You realize he's yelling at the man standing in front of the tanks. And a few seconds later, some other civilian people come out, grab him, and pull him off to the side, and the tanks roll on. And we know, I don't really remember that. I watched it again getting ready for today's show. I watched those moments and tried to remind myself of what happened, and I have no conscious memory of those people dragging him away from that tank. These other civilians, not soldiers, dragging him away from in front of those tanks. I don't have that memory from 1989, which makes me wonder if we just left it with him standing in front of the tanks and ourselves saying, hooray, China will be free, never realizing that, you know, there was going to be a price to be paid. And it wasn't guaranteed. The outcome of this whole thing was not promised. It was not going, you know, it was not certain. And this man standing in front of that tank, we kind of left him there standing in front of that tank emotionally. In the end, the Chinese army, the PLA, the People's Liberation Army, was ordered by the Politburo, the communists in charge of that, to essentially attack the protesters in Tiananmen Square to clear it out. And they did so, and they did so with great brutality, and they did so with great effectiveness. They killed hundreds, again, if not thousands. Nobody actually knows the number of people killed in that attack by the Chinese army. Nobody knows. And China has gone out of its way to make sure that nobody ever will know these things. The horror, I do remember the disappointment. Man, we'd gone through East Germany being liberated. We'd gone through Poland, Hungary, Czechoslovakia, Yugoslavia. We'd gone through all of these communist nations disintegrating and becoming free and celebrating all that again. And we'd had this excitement in the late 80s, early 90s of the joy that the Cold War was finally coming to an end, and here was the last real bastion of this, China, and it's sort of left with this, I don't know, blah feeling that it had failed. But it had only failed because of violence, and the response to that violence had not been an uprising. It had been essentially meek surrender. And today we have a China where, again, you can't even mention Tiananmen Square. You can't even bring it up in their context. They scrubbed the internet for it. I take great joy and great pleasure, and I always have since I've been on the air, of bringing up this anniversary every time I get a chance, because there's this mentality that the Chinese government thinks that just because they say you can't talk about it, that that applies to me and you. Well, my attitude is fuck you, Beijing. I can talk about it if I want, for two reasons. One, because it happened, it's true. And number two, because I'm an American. And number three, how do we ever communicate this to people born who don't know what the Dragon of the Black Pool is? How do we ever communicate to them that when the ram's head butts against the fence and his horns are entangled, that it's a sign of chaos and it's a sign of difficult, great difficulty at the beginning, but in the end, we shall bring order out of chaos. I believe with all my heart that the Chinese government knows that its communism is doomed. It knows that. And the only way it can continue to exist is by tightening its grip. And as Leia once said, the more you tighten your grip, the more it slides through your fingers. The world knows what's going on. China can pretend that it doesn't, but it does. And sooner or later, those sacrifices of those thousands of people, and I believe that it was thousands of people, will be remembered. But it's up to us today to continue to tell that story, to continue to tell the reality of what actually happened. It was a defeat, okay, for freedom. We need to understand that. Freedom, our side, lost that day. But that doesn't mean you lose the war, does it? Well, if we gave up every time we lost a battle, we would have never gotten to this day in 1942, would we? If we had just given up, those planes that took off from the decks of USS Hornet and USS Enterprise and USS Yorktown early, bright and early that morning of June 4th, 1942, were obsolete. They were junk. And the men who were flying it knew that they were in death traps. They knew that. And they took off anyway. Maybe, just maybe, something would go right. And they flew those ancient Devastator airplanes into that attack, and it failed miserably. For VT-8, it was an absolute devastating. I mean, VT-8 was just one man survived. One. Ensign George Gay. He was the only survivor of the entire attack. 15 planes gone, and their crews gone. But as we know, their sacrifice is what enabled a great victory. Their sacrifice, unintended, I mean, they weren't going in there planning to die, and they weren't going in there planning, they were trying to do their best. But they went in there with that mindset of, we have to do our best, and they failed. But they succeeded beyond their wildest dreams, because they distracted things, and as you know, they created a diversion, and they screwed up the Japanese plans, and a few moments later, in 5 short minutes, the entirety of the Japanese sword was shattered. And on that bright June day, the sacrifice of those men changed the course of history. There's another element to that story that I love, which is that only half of VT-8 was actually aboard USS Hornet that morning. The other half was almost all in Pearl, except for 6 planes. They had just been assigned new TBM Avengers, the new plane, the new torpedo bomber that would go on to become the world famous Avenger. In fact, some of these planes still fly today. That's how good they were. Had they had those planes, who knows? Maybe things would have been different, but they didn't. They had that Devastator, that junk truck, but they did it. But 6 of those Avengers had made it to Midway. They'd been sent to Midway Island to reinforce Midway with the pilots from VT-8. They attacked as well. And only one of their planes survived too. It's an unbelievable story of bravery. It's an unbelievable story of an attack that failed. And yet in that failure, the brightness shone through and the freedom fell from the sky in so many ways. Tiananmen Square, you can't really look at it from the force of freedom. You can't look for it as anything other than, well, we lost that fight. We lost that fight. They lost that fight. The people who were there who were murdered, the people who were there who were slaughtered, the people who were there who were brutally attacked by the communist government, the communist government of the People's Republic of China, failed that day. But did they really fail? Who knows? It's hard to look at China today and conclude that it's anything other than a communist dictatorship. Of course, it's, you know, you got this whole thing with the social scores and all that crap that Chinese people have to put up with. And what scares me is that they do it. They almost seem acquiescent to the younger generations. I mean, keep in mind, someone born that day in 1989 is only 30 years old now. People born after that, like this barista born in 2001, they have no memory of this. To them, it's just something they read about or some chat show host talks about and shows pictures of. They can't feel that per se. It's like a tree without roots. They see the tree, but if it doesn't have any roots underneath it, the tree's not going to last long. It doesn't mean anything to them. And as we get further and further away from the battles of Midway and D-Day coming up in a couple of days, the 75th anniversary of D-Day, and there are fewer and fewer people who can really relate what happened on that day and why it mattered so much and why it still matters. And when you have an entire government of one of the largest, most populous countries in the planet intentionally and knowingly hiding what happened that day, how do we ever communicate to people that there are things in this world worth fighting for, that there are things in this world worth standing up for, that there's a reason why those people were willing to stand in front of those tanks, that there's a reason why those people were willing to gather in Tiananmen Square and why they didn't necessarily run away? The stories that we've picked up through the years, they didn't run away when the army came through and started shooting people. They started throwing things back, rocks, Molotov cocktails, whatever they could find. Was a hopeless battle, but they tried. And somehow I think that when we forget about it, when we fail to communicate it, when we don't tell those young people those things, that maybe it's on us. Maybe we're the ones falling down. Maybe we're the ones failing to live up to what those people were trying to do. Maybe we're the ones forgetting about VT-8 and all the other planes that tried so hard that day and all the sacrifices that were made. It's a little hard to look ourselves in the eyes and go, well, you know, we have a responsibility to history as well. We have a responsibility to make sure that these stories are told and that they are told with passion and that they are told with roots, that we understand that there will be order out of chaos, even though the goat is butting his heads against the fence and entangling their horns, that there will come a time when these sacrifices will inspire a new generation, the next generation, who may not know today why China is here. They may not know about the battles of Midway or D-Day or anything like that. They may not know those things now. But consider there was a time when I didn't either and you didn't either. We didn't know anything about those things. And how did we learn about them? How did we start down that path of understanding that these things matter? How did we get started on that? And how do we then turn around and take those things to people born in 2001 who don't know a 1986 movie that I love that teaches this idea that understanding the past is important because it may need to be fought again. That battle may need to be fought again today. That's the story of Big Trouble in Little China. With the understanding that we have to be patient and we have to understand that order will come out of chaos. Sorry, I feel like I'm losing my voice again today. I don't know all the answers to this, folks, but I do know this. China would prefer that we not talk about any of this, just like I'm sure Great Britain would prefer that we not talk about the American Revolution, just like Germany would prefer that we not talk about World War II, just all of that kind of stuff. That's why it's so important that we do. It's important that we continue to talk about the roots that are under the trees so that we understand that when the wind blows, the trees will stay there because there is a history, because there is a past, and because we understand it. And because we're not willing to let it go. We're not willing to stand aside and go, yeah, we'll let you get away with that one. Right, Turkey? Right, China? Those are important things. That we remember those sacrifices. Tiananmen Square, Midway, Normandy. All those people gave their lives, gave their last full measure of devotion for a cause that they believed in. Or we can just let the communist government tell us not to talk about it. My position on that is, again, to reiterate, fuck you, Beijing. I'm going to talk about it. If you don't like it, you know where I'm at. Come get me. Because I'd love to have that discussion with you. Only we're going to do it on my terms, not yours. Anyway, I got to get going. We got the grandkids today. A lot of stuff to do. Take the time right now. Tell the people that matter in your life you love them very much. You'd miss them if they weren't there, so don't pass up those opportunities. You don't want to have that regret. Plausibly Live, I'm Dave Bowman. This is my show, The Dave Bowman Show, right here on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. Please like us, download us, share us on all your social media. Enjoy the show, and we'll be back hopefully tomorrow. And if not, Constitution Thursday is coming up. Got a really cool, interesting case about the First Amendment and police. See you later, everybody. Have a great day.
The Dave Bowman Show is a Slippery Fish Entertainment production for the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. For more information or to complain about how the show offended you, the text or voicemail number is 209-565-DAVE. For more information about the show, log on to thedavebowmanshow.com.
Hey, I'm going to go do something productive. I'm going to go watch television.